Talking about yielding our rights led me to think of something else, and that is the concept of expectations. Had a bit of a meeting with Kaylee Craney and her fiance Benjamin Cleghorn, and that was the thing that I wanted to bring up. They've been having sessions with their pastor, Mark Felber, and he's entirely capable of doing a great job. But the thing that I brought up was this, that when you get married, the man you marry ends up taking the place in your thinking of what your dad did, not in relationship to your mom, but in relationship to the house, to the home, to everything else. So that if you all just take for granted that your husband, your new husband, is going to be like your old dad, he's going to know what to do, he's going to think certain things, this is going to be a silent expectation that he may or may not fulfill. If he fulfills it, great, that's what you expected. But if he doesn't, then you don't like it. You expected him to do that. He didn't do it. And if Benjamin has a mother with skills and duties and love of this and love of that, he's just going to kind of think that that's the role that his new wife's going to fill. And again, the problem is expectations. Expectations, if you have unyielded expectations, if you have unexpressed expectations, they will dry up the motive of your mate to please you. It will come across as though nothing you can do is good enough. They expect a lot of you, but there's no praise for that. So in the spirit of a marriage, I wanted to talk about two things, and I just imagine that I'll only get through the first half this week, and we'll take the next half next week. But asking this question, what causes the spirit of a husband to react to the spirit of his wife? By react, I mean have a reaction, you know. If you put a lotion on a spot on your arm and you had a reaction, you understand what that would be. There would be some sort of red rash, some painful itch or something. The picture, the drawing here shows the man and wife. Choose which side you want that to be. And Ephesians 5:21, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Now God, represented there at the top, the triangle is sort of the three in one, three persons, one God. And I like to think of the cycling lines to be that that rotating of each one seeking to serve the other. The love of God loving all of the other persons. We have, each one of us, have a relationship to God, and we have a relationship to each other. Now, God has said, has given us a commandment for the husband and a special commandment for the wife. Whenever he talks about this, he always talks about the duty of the wife first. I have a theory as to why he always does that. My theory is that the wife is often more sensitive to God. The wife is often more ready to do the right thing, whereas the husband would be afraid to do it, lest it didn't work. So he talks to the wife first. And if you can get this thing down, it opens up the husband's freedom to obey his part. He should do it anyway, but it will do this. Now, the verse that I'm thinking of here for the wife is Ephesians 5:22. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. A marriage is a picture of Christ in the church. And in this regard, as you would submit to Christ, as you would give your life for him, he says, take that as the clue and submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Now, this is fraught with danger, you know, where you're trusting him to tell you nothing but the right thing. You're trusting him to know only the right thing. And that's a lot of faith. But the faith is in God who told you to do it. This is where if you can argue yourself out of submitting to your husband, you have argued yourself out of obeying God. And when you do that, no matter how justified you feel it is, you will cause the spirit of your husband to react to you. You will cause a reaction. And that reaction will not be pleasant. That reaction will not be best for either of you, for the family. So let me share with you then the several things that happen if a wife is not submissive. The first is this: resistance to his will. He expresses what he wants done, and she says, I don't think that's a good idea at all. Resistance to his will. I would think that if you were laboring and had a job where you actually dealt personally with the boss, and he said, this is what I want done. And if you didn't think that was a good thing, and you felt that it was important for you to express that, you'd be very careful how you said that. You would go to the boss with humility, all that. But if it's just your husband, you don't take that time. And he will react to that. When a wife resists her husband's will, he may attempt to use force to break her will. There's a lot of what's called abuse that, and there's no excuse for that. But the cause of it is the husband trying to establish that he is the boss. Now, he may not do that. He may just back off. You don't like what I say? You pick. And so he withdraws. He doesn't do a husbandly duty of running things. And it makes it necessary for her to assume his responsibility. And then he's not too concerned about her failing, because that'll just show her she should have listened to me. See? That's part of this reaction. And this might convince her to let him be the final authority. He can imagine that it all falls apart doing it her way, and she comes, I should have listened to you in the first place. That's his fantasy. Very often, though, her spirit is broken. Spirit is broken and not the will. That is, I tried to give him some help. I tried to to give him a better idea, and he just dropped the whole thing. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't think it was a good idea, because he tends to just drop everything. He just doesn't care, and it breaks her spirit. She gets discouraged. Causes her not to care what happens and to deeply resent him. Resistance to his will. You have to be careful with this, you see. A second thing that happens, if the wife is not submissive, is a lack of confidence in his decisions. Let me just explain a little bit about the making of decisions. You should understand this. There was the black fellow that worked with President Bush and was part of the commanding of the army?
Colin Powell.
Colin Powell. And it was brought out that he didn't always agree with the president. And somebody brought that up, somebody in the news. And he said, no, that's part of my job is to offer another point of view if I have it. But he said, once the decision is made, then I'm on board. That's the way you follow the chain of command. You contribute, you put up your ideas, but when the boss says, then we'll do it this way, you say, okay, that's it. If after the decision is made, you keep making suggestions, what have you said? I have no confidence in your decision. And that hurts. Expressing disapproval, questions, or anxiety over husband's decisions will cause him to become defensive and reactionary. However, questions asked in a spirit of eagerness to carry out his decisions may cause him to reevaluate poor decisions. If you jump right on board, you're ready to go, and then you say, now, how do you think I should approach this part of what you said to do? He'll go, oh yeah, that wouldn't work out very well. So now he can, but see, he's free to do that because you aren't doubting his decision. You're doubting how you would apply it. That's a very different thing. If the husband fails to evaluate poor decisions and failure is imminent, that this decision is going to mess things up, the wife must be quick to remember the benefits of allowing her husband to go through failure. The story was told of a wife who the husband was making a bad financial decision. And she said, no, that's not going to work. She just took it into her hands to correct that because she didn't want to lose most of what they had. Now, the backstory is that they started out with hardly anything, and they depended on each other and valued each other's opinion, and they built a business up. What the wife didn't realize is that the secretary had eyes on the husband, successful man. If she had just gone along with his idea and things had failed and part of the business was lost, the secretary would have bailed. But as it is, she saved the business, she lost her husband. I'm not saying that's her fault, you understand. I'm saying that the fault there lies that she didn't get this idea of being submissive, and she didn't value his being a failure. She must not say when it fails, I told you so, but rather focus on personal character qualities she can gain through her husband's failure. This puts pressure on, okay, we got it, but you can grow through that. And if God has told you to submit, and he has, then in submission, when the failure happens, God has called you to this, endure this failure, to grow through this failure. And it will be better for both of you. The third thing is this. The husband instinctively longs for the admiration of his wife. He wants to be admired. He does not want to fail. Therefore, if his decision is obeyed and it fails, then he tends to learn far more through a failure than his wife can imagine. This is where he says, that was a bad decision. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry to put you through this. I had envisioned this very differently, see. But now they're together. Now they're side by side in this thing. All right, the next one is inflexibility to his priorities. Look, she says, I have things that I think are important. You have things that you think are important. I can't let go of these things just because you think something else is important. She's inflexible to his priorities. That's not submission. That's not a submissive spirit. Recognize that the difference between men and women, the difference between husband and wife, the difference between mother and father is built within us. And the wife's priorities are related to her frame of reference, which often involves the immediate necessities of daily living. So she wants to spend the money to buy the new vacuum cleaner. See? Immediate necessities of daily living. And he says, we don't have the money for that. She knows you do have the money for it, but he's thinking that money is being saved up for something else. His priority goes over her priority, and she doesn't like it. See? Tell you a story that I've told before. There was a lady that came to the church, and I happened to be mentioning some of these things. And afterwards, at the old building, met in the foyer there, and she said, well, you said I should obey my husband. What if he's trying to kill me? I said, well, I don't think this is, the lobby here is the best place for us to talk about this. Can we get together and meet and so on? So she did. And she explained the situation, and she was wanting to spend money that he said they wouldn't, and she knew that he was saving up money. And she had it all figured out that he was saving up money to abandon her. She was very expectant. And he had married her after they found out she was pregnant. And she figured that this was his way of saving up all of their money so he could bail. I talked her through this and asked about his frame of reference and that type of thing. And she told me that she came from a family that pretty much spent whatever the money they got their hands on. He came from a family that was very careful with their finances. And I said, I don't think you're getting what he's trying to do. And I encouraged her to actually go to him and ask for forgiveness for a wrong attitude and to say, if you are, you think it's saving up the money, it was the vacuum cleaner was the thing that she wanted to buy. If we can find, if not, then I'll just agree. And so she came back, she says, I can't believe it. He actually listened. He apologized to me. And he told me that he's saving up the money for us to buy a better house. Now, he hadn't thought that he could share that with her, you know, help her envision this new future. And but it just solved everything. She was only thinking of these things from her own frame of reference. I remember they had the baby and named it Melody. I thought that was nice now that the family was in harmony, right? The man's priorities are related to a different frame of reference, which often involves the future of his work and the direction of the family. Now, both frames of reference are essential, but the wife must realize that God's ultimate direction will be through the husband's frame of reference, however large or small it may be, and that he must realize that her frame of reference will reveal important aspects toward that direction. So if you cause him to react against you, then the very points you're trying to make are going to be dismissed because you're just being mean or something. See? She just doesn't understand. The husband's reluctance to be concerned about her concerns may be a clue that she needs to learn his priorities. So assume that maybe you are part of that problem, it's not all him, and have the submissive attitude. Go to him and ask, could you help me to understand how you're thinking about this? Not that I can choose to accept or reject it, but that I can more readily be on board. Again, resentments for past failures. He's a human being, so he's failed, done wrong things, perhaps offended her in the past. But if that thing always comes up, if there's no way to get past it, then he reacts in his spirit. The husband can sense when his wife has not really forgiven him for things he has done in the past. What does it mean to forgive? What does it mean for God to forgive? Can God forget that you ever did it? He knows everything. He can't forget anything. So it's not that. It's not forgetting it. What it is agreeing never to bring it up again. So have you forgotten? Have you forgiven? Have you actually forgiven what was done in the past? Or as soon as he looks that certain way, you say, there it goes again. You're doing it again. And he says, I can't get by this. Boy was helping mom with the dishes, drying the dishes. He dropped something and broke it. And she said, you're always breaking my dishes. And he thought back, and he could remember only doing that once, and it was like 5 years before. And for him, that was most of a lifetime. What happens is that this thing happens, and the computer card pops up in the memory and says, breaking dishes, he did it before. He's always doing that. She didn't really forgive it. So it was a mark against him. She may attempt to use these failures of his as a way of convincing him he should listen to her. Or she may use them as a way of justifying her wrong response to him. It doesn't matter how you use it. It's just not the right way. If he has shown the repentance and asked for forgiveness, what did Christ say? Once? Twice? 7 times 70? 70 times 7? Forgive it. Let it go. Just don't let that come up again. Another one is failure to build loyalty in the children. This is where the children are in the home and the wife is just as soon to have loyalty for her over loyalty to him. The attitude of the wife toward her husband's actions are quickly picked up by the children. Complaints by her during the day for things that he's not done or the fear of things he will do destroy the response of the children to the father and produce the problem of favoritism between parents and children. You know what children can do with such information? Play favorites. They can say, I know Dad's like that. But I wanted to do this, but you know, I know what he's going to say. Playing on you, soften you up. See? Again, a lack of a grateful spirit. If he has tried, but it was an expectation that you expected it to happen, you don't say thanks for that. You don't express gratitude. When a wife expects extras from her husband, his motivation for providing them decreases. There's no reward for that. I've often told the story of my grandfather, my mother's parents. My grandfather was a very handy man. He had worked as a farmer, worked on the railroad. He could just do about anything. If the tractor broke, he fixed it, found a part, had part made, did the whole thing. Amazing. And the thing is, he would go over and help Widow Brown with her leaky faucet. And it had been keeping her up at night because of the drip, 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 drip. So he gets done, and she says, well, I don't have much money. He says, I don't want your money. And she says, oh, this is so wonderful. Your wife is such a lucky person. I don't know what I would do without your help. Boy, he walks out of there, at least 6 inches off the ground. He gets home and he fixes his faucet at home. His wife says, it's about time you got to it, running around fixing everybody else's stuff. Where did he get paid more? Where did he spend most of his time? What did he neglect doing? If there was anything to neglect, the stuff at home. Grateful spirit. Think of how you should be grateful. Express it. And then inconsistency in discipline. When the wife defends or takes sides with the children because she thinks her husband's punishment is too strict, the husband feels that she is being disloyal to him. Trying to win the children to herself. And that may be what's going on. And then finally, attempts to correct in public. The wife may use jokes or cutting remarks in public to emphasize something she has been trying to change in her husband. And it may get a laugh out of some people, but it won't get a laugh out of him. He might have to laugh to go along with the crowd, but he won't think it's funny. A submissive wife wouldn't do that. She wouldn't make her husband the laughing stock. Wouldn't happen. All right, next week we'll look at what causes the spirit of a wife to react to the spirit of her husband. So if I've given you something to think about, ladies, we'll turn the tables next week as God allows.